Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Missouri's cannabis industry is booming. Since weed became legal for both medical and adult recreational use, it's generated billions of dollars in sales. To put that in perspective, in the first 6 months of this year, Missouri made more money on marijuana than Colorado. Now that is a lot. But at the same time, there's the issue of where that money is going, and Missouri's attempts to regulate who is benefiting are raising troubling questions. Rebecca Rivas has been following those questions for months now. Her latest story, out earlier this week, examines a pattern of predatory contracts. And what her reporting reveals is that groups outside Missouri are still trying to exploit a social equity program that was supposed to help people like veterans and minorities. Now, how that exploitation is happening with these licenses is a little complicated. And here to talk about it is Rebecca Rivas, cannabis reporter for the Missouri Independent. Rebecca, welcome back to the show.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
So, Rebecca, your latest piece is titled Alleged Predatory Contracts Continue to Surface in Missouri Social Equity Cannabis Program. So let's break it down a little bit. Now, first of all, Missouri's Social Equity Cannabis Program was meant to help certain populations enter the cannabis industry, and that includes minorities, veterans, and people who've been harmed by the war on drugs. And instead, what you have found is that outside groups are actually recruiting candidates to obtain these special licenses and then taking ownership themselves. So how do these predatory contracts come into play?
Right. Well, so I guess I started this story about a year ago in October. That was when the first results were published online at the DHSS cannabis regulation site. And I was hoping to do a good news story, like, oh, great, you know, this person got a license. What I was expecting to find was a list of names of people who I could contact to reach out to either they got it or, you know, talk to people who also didn't get it. But if you look online, what you see is a list of sometimes just the same person's name over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And that would be like the designated contact. And then there's an address. It's the same address over and over and over again as well. I just kind of started asking questions like, wait, isn't it just supposed to be one person? You get one lottery ticket. Mm-hmm. You know, you get one application to get into the lottery. And that's supposed to level the playing field. A lot of states do it this way. They're hoping to get as many, you know, more disadvantaged business owners into the marijuana industry mm-hmm. as a way to, you know, create more equity in the program.
So this lottery system, can you talk a little bit more about that?
Right. Yeah. So basically, it's Missouri Lottery. They pick the name. You get two picks per congressional district for dispensary licenses and four for wholesale licenses. And where we're kind of seeing a little bit more interest from the outside investors is with the dispensaries. So that's kind of where most of my investigation has been centered on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, basically, when I looked at the list, I saw there was about 104 dispensary applications associated with a Michigan cannabis investor. Mm-hmm. Then there was 80 with a Missouri cannabis consultant named John Payne, and then more than 400 tied to an Arizona group.
Okay. So first it was Michigan, now it's Arizona. Mm-hmm. And the similarities between them, particularly as they pertain to the contracts, what are those similarities?
Yeah, so at that time in October last year, I was able to do a lot of rabbit hole like searching through Secretary of State business searches and et cetera. And I was able to connect with a man in Illinois who had won the lottery there for a social equity cannabis license. And he had been recruited to be an applicant in Missouri. And so when I asked him, I was like, did you sign any agreements? He said yes, with this Michigan group that was tied to all of those licenses, and it essentially was a contract that said he agreed to give the business over for a dollar. And he didn't realize that that's what it said because it's a very long technical contract. Mm-hmm. So he sent me the contract, and I was able to kind of read it myself. I was able to find another woman in Illinois who also signed a contract with that group for Illinois, not Missouri, but it was she had no idea that this was what the contract said, mm-hmm. that she was going to be giving over her business. She thought it was a genuine business opportunity. And so at that point, I only knew about what Michigan was doing. I didn't have a contract for Arizona or for John Payne. Mm-hmm. And now, since then, I have. I've gotten a contract for each one of those groups, and it's all very much the same.
Right.
It's a very technical contract mm-hmm. that, in the end, attempts to give control over to whoever the investor is, and also majority profits mm-hmm. and voting interests.
And so that is where the harm comes into play?
That's right. Yeah, because, I mean, I think a lot of these people, and particularly in the most recent story I did with the Arizona contract, is with a woman named Destiny Brown, and she is a resident of Arizona. She is a disabled African-American veteran. She signed on to an inquiry form that said, you know, I'm interested in getting into this business. I want to help other veterans like myself. And she thought that they were going to help her to start a business. She mm-hmm. was being recruited to run the business with the help of an investor. Mm-hmm. She didn't know that the very complicated 47-page contract said that she was essentially going to have to give over ownership and if everything went through.
Right.
So
then these folks are essentially serving as a foot in the door, and buried in the language of the contract is that they'll sign everything over. Mm-hmm. So to clarify then, who is eligible for these programs? I mean, we're talking about Missouri's social equity cannabis program, otherwise known as the microbusinesses.
That's right.
It's not limited only to Missouri residents. Why is that the case?
Right. That actually ended up changing. Pardon. In 2021, that was associated with a lawsuit that was brought forth as part of the medical marijuana mm-hmm. Program. And so, yeah, the federal court threw out the Missouri residency requirement. Mm-hmm.
We're talking with Rebecca Rivas, cannabis reporter for the Missouri Independent. Her latest piece, published earlier this week, delves into contracts that continue to surface in Missouri's social equity cannabis program. So, Rebecca, Missouri issued dozens of these microbusiness licenses in October of last year, only then to revoke a whole bunch of them. So what now is the overall status of the social equity cannabis program?
Yes. So two of those licenses that were revoked were connected to the Michigan group, and then another six were connected to the Arizona group. So those are being appealed currently, which is actually, for a reporter, great news, because that means that it will go before the Administrative Hearing Commission, and lots of documents are going to be filed in this case. They're going to have to explain what they did. The cannabis regulators will get to explain their standpoint. So the public will actually get to know a lot more about what happened mm-hmm. in these cases. However, those groups currently have licenses now in the second round. Mm-hmm. So the Michigan group has two dispensary licenses, and I believe the Arizona group is connected to seven mm-hmm. current dispensary licenses. So they lost six and they gained seven.
Right.
So they're still very much in the game.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of Arizona, in your latest piece, you talk about one particular person. His name is Michael Hallow, and he's an investor who is based in Arizona and is an example of the sort of outside investor, you know, whose applications have been struck down, and then using these predatory contracts. I think you mentioned the name of the woman who sort of led you to Michael Hallow. But what is it that you learned about him, and what investors of his sort are trying to do in Missouri?
Right. Well, I think he's a great example of kind of the overall scheme, basically, there's an investor, and then they hire on a consulting firm who goes out and recruits people, like Destiny. Or you know, it depends. They could use that group. They could do it some of it themselves. You know, it all really depends. And then they find a law group, a law firm, that draws up the contract that essentially lays out this way that they would eventually give over ownership, voting rights, profits, those kinds of things. And this is kind of just the very general scheme. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's almost like a product at this point. You know, it's not really just one person, one law firm, one consulting firm. It is being done in all the states that are doing these kinds of programs, mm-hmm. these social equity cannabis licenses.
Yeah. So it's not just outside groups that are, quote, gaming these social equity cannabis licenses. One of the architects of Missouri's legal cannabis industry, you've mentioned his name, John Payne, has also used these sorts of predatory contracts. What's the background on him that we should be thinking about?
Right. Well, I think a lot of people know John Payne for being the person that was out front for both the medical cannabis and the recreational cannabis constitutional amendment campaigns to get them passed. And he was the spokesperson. He also works with just the marijuana industry overall on lots of panels. You know, he's a very well-known person. And I think the interesting thing about him is he's always really expressed his interest in equity and creating an equitable cannabis industry. Mm-hmm. And so I think he's gone on a lot of panels trying to be a mentor for microbusiness applicants and things like that. So I guess it was very surprising to see that this was the kind of contract that he was pushing out to people that he was recruiting. Mm-hmm. And I think from his part, you know, he said, you know, this wasn't all of the 300 applications that were connected to me this time. It was only a select few. It was only people that we kind of knew that were connected to members of our team. But, you know, the fact that you have that kind of contract and you're pushing it out there, it's the exact same as all the other ones.
Right.
So it's just, it's, you know, it's hard. It's I think it's very difficult for mm-hmm. people to see that was coming out of that person's consulting firm.
So we have a couple minutes left, about a minute and a half or so. Briefly, Rebecca, talk to us about hemp products. That's something that more of us are going to see, you know, out in the world. They're not cannabis, but a beverage with THC from hemp. Still going to give you a buzz. Now, Missouri Governor Mike Parson tried to take these products off the shelves, but that ban has now been paused. So what's the deal now, Missouri, with hemp?
Right. Well, if you're the attorney for the Missouri Hemp Trade Association, you say that these sales are back on, you know, that people don't have to pause them anymore because they are really just going after things that look like candy, mm-hmm. you know, that look in the same. They're edibles that look just like popular candy children would go after. And that is going to be through the power of the attorney general to just go over like misbranded products. The mass majority that they were also hoping to get are not going to be enforced currently.
So we have to kind of wait and see what happens with that,
too. That is definitely another one. Wait and see. Yes.
Rebecca Rivas is Missouri Independent's cannabis reporter. Rebecca, thank you so much for returning again.
Thanks so much.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.